afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on the magical isle of Vashon. And I have what for me is a particularly special program, and we will make it a special one for you as well, because I have a much-loved Coast Guard family with me, and two generations, three academy classes, all of us even-numbered classes, and we're going to talk about the transfer, because this is a family in transition, a family in promotion, and many good things. But before we get into that, of course, this is the time when I deliver my greetings, and my greetings today go to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world who are being transferred, all of my military people who are being transferred and who are undergoing the challenges and the stresses that go with that. I recognize and acknowledge that those are in particular to the children of all ages, and in particular to the wives, because their galleys have to be uprooted and everything packed up and moved on to the next duty station. And yet it is part of our life, and it is a necessary part of our life, and it has been like this since the beginning of time. Military people have moved, and they've moved their families since probably the first time that man straddled a log, and that was his first time going to sea. And he left behind his wife on the beach, and she was figuring out how she was going to get over to the other side so that she would be there to meet him and greet him when she came home. So that's my greeting today. My binnacle list is a sad one in one way, and that is that I had told last week, I had said that I was going to go out to Point Wilson Light Station and be a part of the program out there where they were relighting their fourth order Fresnel lens. And I had been invited to do this by a former Coast Guardsman, a second class yeoman. I did not on that broadcast, and I'm not going to have time today to tell some stories about yeomen that I have known and who have helped to take care of me through over all of the years. But I went out, had made a commitment to be a part of the ceremony, to make a presentation, and I drove out to Fort Worden, which is where the lighthouse is, and I'm sitting in a car park waiting for the appointed hour for eight bells of the forenoon watch to strike. And I get a signal from my yeoman friend. And he said, "Captain Joe, I am not going to be able to be at the ceremony today to which I have invited you, because my brother, who you met 2 weeks ago, has just been admitted to the hospital, and he is probably not going to make it." So I went to the ceremony, I made my presentation, and at the end of the afternoon, I came back, and there was a signal from my new member of Captain Joe's people, second class yeoman, and he said, "My brother died at noon." All of this reminds us of the fragility of life and how quickly people that we love and who were seem to us to be in particularly good shape and ready to keep on going and ready to be a part of life, how quickly it can be taken away from us. I, of course, know that from my own personal experience. And I know that many of Captain Joe's people have also experienced that, have felt it. And now it has happened to me in a very direct way, in a very unexpected way. And so I am sending the binnacle list regards of all of Captain Joe's people to Joe's family, and a recognition of the enjoyment that I had of meeting both of them out at Point Robinson Light. My friend Dr. Phillips, who is my next-door neighbor, has just had surgery yesterday, and so he is in a prominent place on the binnacle list as he recovers And Captain O'Brien, my Alaska Airlines aircraft commander, is resisting me mightily about going and getting himself checked out so that his orthopedic problems can be resolved. And so I leaned into him just a little bit today about that. For all of Captain Joe's people who are on the Binnacle list today, know that you remain, as always, in the palm of my hand, and that the good signals that go out to all of you remain as strong and as concentrated as they ever are. And for all of you who are signalmen or who know signals, Romeo is close up. Now, we're going to move to the family Weston, and so we're going to make sure that we've got everybody on the board here. And so I'm going to use the commander's first name, which is Avery, but in fact, he is about to put on the silver leaves of a full commander. And so, Avery, I'm going to extend my personal congratulations to you and ask you, first of all, to speak into the tube there and make sure that you are on the board.
Yes, Captain. This is my first time speaking to you on the radio, and I'm just saying I'm very pleased and happy to be here today, especially with my father and son as well. So thank you for having me.
And your mom is here.
Mom is here as well.
Yeah. How come you passed her over? She's the beauty in the whole thing.
She is the one glue that keeps it all together.
Well, maybe so. So since my custom is always to start with the junior man, and amongst us, you are the junior man. So I'd be very much interested to hear how, first of all, where you are being transferred from and to where you are going. I happen to know the answer to that question, but all of Captain Joe's people who are listening do not. And so it is now to you to tell us a little bit about the transfer, a little bit about the job that you're leaving, about which I do have a little bit of a commentary, and then the job to which you are going, about which I will also have a little bit of a commentary. So carry on.
Yep. So, so I'm in the midst of the PCS move, and so I am departing base San Juan, Puerto Rico, as the executive officer in charge of a lot of the logistics that goes on down there, and I'm being transferred to the Coast Guard Academy as the facilities engineer. So as you mentioned, we're all academy grads here, and it'll be nice to kind of go back to the alma mater. And I did take a little bit of a pass down back in March, where I did get to walk the site with the person I'm relieving and get a sight of the academy. I have not been back significantly since I graduated, and so it was nice to kind of be back and walk the town or walk the site. But in terms of May 19th, I also hit 15 years, so close to the 20-year mark, but not quite there.
So a congratulations on your earning the brass hat.
Yeah, so I was frocked in the position of the facilities engineer is a full commander. I did get selected, but have not officially made it, and so they frocked me as I departed San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Tell my listeners who may not know the term frocked what that means.
So frock designates essentially you get the rank but not the pay. So you get to put on the insignia, you get to put on the shoulder boards, but you're being paid as the previous rank.
And you are addressed as commander.
You get the privilege and the obedience as the duties of the commander, correct.
When you were XO, now I have to tell you, your dad knows this and your mom knows this, but you may not. I was, when I was the group commander up in the Great Lakes, I was also a base commander and I was a captain of the port. And I had a vessel traffic service that was part of my command. So I've been a base commander and so as you were the XO, and we all know that XO's day is never done, and that you were responsible to your captain or to your commanding officer. Was he a captain?
So currently, the way they designate it down there, there's a sector, and so the sector has two captains, and so that's a separate command. And then the base command is the mission support entity, and so you had a commander as the commanding officer, and then the XO is a lieutenant commander. And so there is a little bit of a rank mismatch, but in terms of the sector, captains are the captains of the port, and so they're in charge of the prevention, the inspection, the vessel traffic. They can provide those types of vessel traffic. In terms of the base command, it's more of the facilities, administration, health services, yeoman support, galley, housing, and especially when you're in Puerto Rico, OCONUS, those types of logistic entities take on a higher significance, especially when you're talking about the move of shipping vehicles, pets, on airplanes, carriers. There's just a lot of logistics that goes into getting people in and out of the area.
Was your commanding officer a frequent mast holder?
So I think in our tour together, I had two commanding officers. This past one, I think we held two captain's masts, and there was one or two cases that are kind of percolating towards potential court-martial, but in terms of still in the midst of under review.
So I'm a believer that we hold formal disciplinary ceremonies to a minimum and work through the chief's mess in particular. Because I was raised by chief petty officers. And so that's the thrust of that question. When I talk to somebody that's on active duty now, I'm always interested in how many pages in the unit punishment book are being filled out. And it sounds to me like the commanding officers that you served were had, and hopefully you as well, had the belief that much of the discipline of a command can be handled in a way which is constructive, effective, but does not appear in the service record.
Yeah, I mean, the balance that you always kind of see is like the balance between holding people accountable and then the other piece of, you know, not, you know, giving them abilities to recover from slip-ups, mistakes. I think the challenge is trying to identify which ones are, you know, mistakes that have gone too far and need to be addressed in a much more kind of significant manner than just the chief's mess, you know, kind of counseling or, you know, but I think it's a good point. I think it's very kind of not subjective, but I think it's also based on the case itself, and you kind of have to trust the people that you're, you know, you have as your cadre advising you. I think the chief's mess is very important. I think also you have some department heads that you really count on for advice because they are aware of things that you can never, you know, you can't fully get your finger on the full backstory. But I think the other piece too is you also need to, I think, set the standard and I think not have the reputation of trying to kind of sweep things under the rug that I think sometimes happens when, people don't see that, you know, some cases are adjudicated in a, you know, unit log or, you know, more sure. significant manner. But I think it's a good point. I think in terms of 3 years in San Juan, Puerto Rico, where I think alcohol and there's a lot of things going around in that region, I say it was a mission accomplished in terms of good people. I think everyone I served with impressed me. So I think in terms of the state of the personnel, the Coast Guard, I'm very pleased with.
So well, so well done to you from this captain.
Thank you, sir.
And now I'm going to move over to your mom because she's the next one in the age hierarchy. And Laura, it's lovely to see you, dear.
Thank you.
And get right up to the mic there. Let's say something kind and generous and gracious to me, so I'll know that you're on the board.
I want to hear the news about your sailboat.
You want to hear about my sailboat? All right, mm-hmm. We'll carve out a little bit of time for that in just a minute.
Okay.
But it is to me to ask you
yes.
this question because One of the things that the newly frocked commander asked me was how many transfers I had had. And I quickly counted up and I said about 10. So tell me about a experience that you had in one of your transfers as a Coast Guard wife.
Okay, really quick. Here's the boy that you just spoke with who was in my stomach and pregnant, hoping to have our second son on this beautiful Isle of Vashon. We had just bought our 20-acre property in 1985, and we were promised to have 4 years here to station, and I was all set up to, you know, really be home. And come to find out, we were transferred down to California, and we didn't even live here for a year, and it broke my heart, but, you know, that's what you go, you do. And looking back, it was all a blessing because during that time, my mom got diagnosed as having cancer, and we were able to, we lived two doors down from her. We rented a house, and I was able to be with her, and you know, things happen in your life where you don't understand. And then when you look back, you just understand the whole trajectory. And it's really a beautiful thing. So that was a very memorable move, especially knowing that, you know, this kid here was our second son.
You thought that you were going to be here for 4 years, and instead you got transferred someplace else.
Exactly.
And in a minute, I'm going to talk to Captain Ron about and ask him for his commentary on that particular transfer, because that does happen. And it happens pretty frequently, in fact. And so the wonderful expression that goes back at least to Roman times is the needs of the service. And when the service needs a particular person in a particular place and a particular specialty in a particular place, then the needs of the service have to take precedence over the needs of the family and of the people. And so those of us in command positions need to always be aware that we, when we make those decisions and we require those things of our people, that we do the very best that we can to mitigate the downstream effects of that. Do you feel that that was in fact what happened with you, that at least there was some consideration for that?
No.
Okay. It's not okay. I am rogering for what you are telling me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right, Captain Ron, over to you. In this particular transfer that we're talking about here, how did it in fact happen that you were supposed to be here for a four-year tour, and you ended up being quickly transferred someplace else?
Well, it was 1986 was the year that the Gilbert reorganization, basically realigned how the Coast Guard, support side, shoreside support was organized. And so since I was at that point a lawyer, Coast Guard lawyer, working in the district legal office, and those positions basically got eliminated and got shifted over to a new organizational element known as a maintenance and logistics command. And so my billet basically had been eliminated in that reorganization, and the slot for the legal services I was providing the Coast Guard was now down in Alameda, California. And fortunately, Laura's family was from the Bay Area, and so we were able to live very close to her parents. And but it was befuddling because when we found our place on Vashon, which we had just purchased, only lived there 11 months before we were transferred, we were just, this is the place we're meant to be. We just knew that this is the forever place that we're just going to be here forever. And, the job I was in was supposed to be a four-year job. I had just come out of law school at University of Washington, and so I was a newly minted lawyer. And well, like Laura said, you know, you look back on things and you realize how it all worked out for the best. We were able to be close to Laura's family, to her mother, when she was terminally ill with cancer her last year. And Avery was born in time for Grandma Claire to become acquainted with baby Avery. And we had some really good years in California. And, you know, and ultimately the vortex of Coast Guard headquarters in Washington, D.C., you know, proved the suction effect was too great to overcome. And eventually, after a tour in California, we were sent east to Coast Guard headquarters, which also worked out to be a good thing. But it was hard to see the good in it at the time when these things were happening. And, you know, there's, you know, a lot of people that still look back on that reorganization and kind of lament it, you know, from a perspective of, you know, was that really the best thing for the Coast Guard? But, you know, we and the Coast Guard adapted, and, you know, it all worked out for the best.
So when you went back to headquarters from the California tour, was that also a four-year tour?
Well, let's see. You know, there was an intervening step that I omitted. While I was in the legal office in Alameda, the Coast Guard decided that it wanted to have a environmental specialization for lawyers, which meant going back for a master's of law degree in environmental law. And the then chief counsel wanted to create a environmental law division that was focused on conforming with all of the Coast Guard, basically adhering to all of the requirements that environmental law places on the Coast Guard operation. And
with which we're still dealing today.
Exactly. Yeah. It's an ongoing issue. The Coast Guard, of course, had always been an enforcer of environmental laws and had a law division that was very expert in the application of those laws on the folks that we, the Coast Guard, regulated. That division was already, you know, established, but the chief counsel wanted a division that would be focused on, if you will, defending the Coast Guard and making sure that, you know, providing good advice to operational commanders to, you know, be in good stead with the environmental laws that we are beholden to follow. So I applied for that selection for that additional training in law, and then I went to UC Berkeley Law School for a master's of law degree. And so we were able to stay in the Bay Area while I stopped being the Coast Guard lawyer working at the MLC, and I became the law student at Berkeley working on getting a master's of law degree, which I did. And once we completed that, I knew my home was going to likely be back in Washington, D.C. in this new law division that was being created. And that's what transpired. And it, as it turned out, Laura's sister was living in Annapolis at that time. And so we, of course, looked for housing in Annapolis, Maryland, because there's a pretty sizable contingent of Coasties living in that area that commute to the headquarters in D.C. So that became our new home, beginning in, I guess it would have been about 1992. And then I was there for 9 years in different jobs over the, not always as a lawyer. First, you know, it was environmental law, and I had a civilian boss who was a former Coastie, actually, and but he had come to us from the state of Montana, where he'd been on the governor's staff, so he had a nice eclectic background that made it a very interesting job. And then when he jumped ship to another opportunity, I got fleeted up to be the boss of the law division, and then I was selected for captain. That would have been 96, and they decided that I should go over to the legislative division, which was responsible for providing essentially assistance to congressional staffs, staffing up the language for legislation that affects the Coast Guard in either our appropriation or in our authorization act. And that was a very interesting job, put, you know, you in touch with how DC works. And so I became familiar with the legislation that, you know, directly impacts the Coast Guard. And the lawyers working for me worked on crafting the exact language to make the effects of the laws as they get passed by the Congress be as intended and helpful.
So we only have a couple minutes left. I wanted all of Captain Joe's people to hear these stories, both from the point of view of a currently serving officer and then from a Coast Guard family honorably retired, and then from my own point of view. So Laura has asked in particular for an update on the boat, my boat acquisition. And I would point out, as I have received a number of signals from Captain Joe's people who say essentially, what the hell are you doing at your particular age level buying a 30-foot sloop? And the answer to that, of course, is that it is because I am at that particular age level that I am buying this actually 29-foot, 6-inch sloop. And I have made a firm commitment to buy it and have now moved forward to applying for membership in the Tacoma Yacht Club. I may not be found worthy, and if I'm not found worthy, then I'll just have to anchor it off of my house. But I am, in fact, going to do it. And when I first went aboard this boat, she talked to me. And she said, "Captain, I am your boat." And I looked around and I found that there was no electronic charting equipment. There was none of that crap that was in the boat. The only thing that's in it is a radio, a fathometer. And the current owner had bought an AIS transponder. And he said, "But Captain Joe, if you decide you don't want to mess with AIS, which is automatic information system, it's what tracks all of the shipping in the world, all on marine traffic. And I will check in with the Coast Guard on AIS. And one reason for that is that should I cross my own bar while I'm out on the boat, that I don't want the boat to fetch up on some lee shore here on the magical Isle of Vashon like an old whale. And so I want the Coast Guard to be able to go out and pull me in and get me suited up for this funeral that we're going to have here on the island as my last gift for the island community." So that's my boat story. My last piece of sad information is that I have just learned that the next Coast Guard cutter, Ingham, which was under construction at Eastern Shipbuilding in Panama City, Florida, the construction on her has been halted, and that is because there's going to be a major re-examination of entire Coast Guard shipbuilding, and hopefully she will be picked up. Well, this is significant to me, of course, because all of Captain Joe's people who listen to me every week know that I am the senior living captain of the Ingham, in which I served in Vietnam. She is still afloat in Key West, Florida. And this September, I am going to go down to her, and I was going to cut a piece of steel out of her and take it to the next Ingham under construction and weld that piece of steel into her hull girder. And now all of that is put on hold until we see exactly what's going to happen. My large watch is telling me that once again we have come to the end of our time together, and it's just been lovely to have all of you here. Avery, once again, Commander, my congratulations on your promotion and on the new job that is coming to you. Laura, as always, it is lovely to see you, to talk to you, and hear from you. And my dear Captain, as always, my most heartfelt regard, respect, and affection for you personally and for the three of us together as graduates of the Coast Guard Academy in even years. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. This is, as always, your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on station and watching properly.